صباح الخير. Good morning. The listeners, you're listening to Radio 3CR on 855 AM and Palestine Remembered with Youssef Al-Rimawi, Robert Martin and Nasser Mashni.
I've been waiting for tomorrow to come.
Welcome to another edition of Australia's only radio program that is totally dedicated to the Palestinian cause in English language. We would like to welcome our listeners on the AM dial and those who will join us later on 3cr.org.au/podcasts.
I've been waiting for tomorrow to come.
This is a special episode on the Sorry Day and an interview with Kucha Edwards, the voice for the Aboriginal cause. And this is also a song for Kucha, Waiting. Stay with us and enjoy the episode.
Tomorrow to come. Heading towards tomorrow. Life's not what it seems. Needing to find the courage, nurture our children's dreams. I've been waiting for tomorrow.
Well, listeners, we're very excited to be enjoyed by Kucha Edwards, who's a prominent Aboriginal activist. He's a community worker and works all over these Indigenous lands for Aboriginal rights. Welcome, Kucha.
Good evening on this beautiful day. But 3CR, I've been here for probably 20, 25, 30 years, but great to finally sit with the Palestinian brothers and people and your community radio program.
It's an honor to be with you, Kucha. You said on your official website that music is not what I do, it is who I am.
Mm.
Tell me about how important music is in your life and how that started.
I remember as a kid being in choirs and the fulfillment I had when I'd sing. I remember as a kid hopping in, maybe an old FJ Holden and listening to music such as The Seekers, rock and roll and riding out along the bay, all bound for morning town, many miles away. I was only a kid, and listening to musicians or singer-songwriters like Karen Carpenter and the Carpenters. And then later in life, you become a teenager and you chase this Sharon football, and that becomes your passion. Well, it's an avenue to become part of a group, going to training on Tuesday and Thursday nights and then running out with your football club on a Saturday afternoon and being accepted. So sport and Aussie rules and becomes your passion. But then life hands you sometimes cards that you're not really wanting. And so I remember as a budding adult, 17, 18, 19, alcohol and going out to pubs and clubs and every time that I'd have this, the alcohol, it'd give you Dutch courage to get up and sing. And family members and cousins and the community would say, "Oh, Kucha, why don't you join a band?" And I ended up creating a band called Wat Bilimba with about 11 Aboriginal men here in Fitzroy and Melbourne, and That was back in, I think it was about 88, 89. With 11 Aboriginal men came 11 egos. And so that didn't last very long. And then I ended up joining an Aboriginal band with four other members, cousins of mine, called Blackfire. And Blackfire was this avenue that we could sing about the plight of the Aborigine, in the injustice that was happening within our community here in Fitzroy and Melbourne. And so Blackfire was this avenue that, but it also took us to Asia and China and Japan and Taiwan. And so music was this avenue. We saw it as an avenue and escape. I call it dropping a pebble in a pond, and the ripple is what it is, you know. And so travelling to these places and getting to inform not only the non-Indigenous people here in Australia, but people around the world as to who we are as Aboriginal people. And so music's been this great friend of mine, and it gives me the opportunity to voice what's not only in the iPad upstairs, but my spirit. And to understand that it's not about performing. As a magician would go out there or a person in a circus would start juggling and to perform in front of the audience. It's not about the performance. It's about knowing that what you're singing about is the plight of your people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Kutcher, this show is going to air on Saturday, which is the 26th of May, and we know how important that is for Aboriginals because it's a commemoration of National Sorry Day.
Yeah.
And I might give our listeners just a quick synopsis of what that is and how it meant, and then we're going to turn over to you, Kutcher, and if you can tell us, as an Aboriginal man, dispossessed from his land, where sovereignty was never ceded and no treaty has ever been signed, what that actually means to you. So for our listeners, National Sorry Day is an annual event held on the 26th of May, and it's the 20th anniversary since 1998. It remembers and commemorates the mistreatment of our Indigenous Australians, the original custodians of this land. And the date of the 26th of May carries great significance for the Stolen Generations as well. And in particular, this is following a report in 1997 called Bringing Them Home. And at the time, the report recommended to Prime Minister John Howard that he should say sorry. And he refused to, as we know. And what he did say was he did not subscribe to the black armband view of history. Now, what he did on the 26th of August 1999 was say a deep and sincere regret that Indigenous Australians had suffered injustices under the practices of past generations, and for the hurt and trauma that many Indigenous people continue to feel as a consequence of those practices. Mm. It wasn't until the 13th of February 2008 that then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd moved a motion of apology to the Indigenous people in the Stolen Generation. Kevin Rudd became the first Australian Prime Minister to publicly apologise to the Stolen Generation on behalf of the Australian Federal Government.
Mm.
Now, words are pretty cheap in this instance, and they're pretty cheap in the sense that it's now 10 years since Kevin Rudd, 20 years since that report, and we know the plight of the Aboriginal male and female, our first Australians, our Indigenous people, hasn't got any better, could you?
I did a talk on Monday at Loyola College in Watsonia to 250 Year 10 students. I walk in there in an auditorium and the faces they're probably 15, 16-year-olds. And who's this big Aboriginal guy walking in? And I'm fairly robust. I'm 6'4". I'm built like a Sherman tank. And kids are smirking and laughing. And I sort of said to them, listen, I get this all the time. It's not about me being liked by you or disliked. My job, in my belief, is to drop that pebble. Now, what I explain to them is that every year, on the 26th of May, for the last, like you said, the last 20 years, I remember the very first Sorry Day. My son was 9, and we all went into State Parliament House, and we laid white, didn't matter what sort of flower it was, we asked all the community to bring in white flowers and lay on the lay them on the steps of Parliament House. So the steps were awash of white flowers 20 years ago. And later we all walked down to Treasury Gardens. I can't remember if it was then, but I ended up meeting Bono from U2 and The Edge from U2. They were in Australia at the time. And later that evening, my son called his grandmother, my mum. She was living in Gippsland in a town called Traralgon. And he said, "Nan, guess what we did?" And he's only 9 years old. And she says, "What, son?" She calls all their grandchildren son or daughter. And she said, what did you do, son?" And he said, "Nan, we laid flowers on the steps of Parliament House for you." And she said, "What's that for?" She was oblivious to what it really represented.
Mm.
And he said, "Nan, it's Sorry Day." And she goes, "What's that?"
Wow.
So the reality for my mum was that even though all this politics is happening around my mother, she was oblivious to it.
Yeah.
She had six of her children in 1967, the same year that Aborigines are finally bestowed as citizens in this country,
mm-hmm.
on the 27th of May 1967, the referendum. A question is posed to non-Indigenous Australia, should we give Aborigines the right to become citizens of their own country, the right to become part of this country after interference? And my mother just got on with tomorrow, not looking at the past. And this is what I'm trying to tell these students on Monday. And when I think about it, the spirit in which my mother and father conducted themselves after having six of their children forcibly removed from them. My father, Nugget Edwards, stood 6 foot six, and there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. It was law. Police stood alongside government workers to forcibly remove their children from them. And that's the blight, that's the mark on this country, and non-Indigenous Australia let it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the sad thing about it. And my job is to inform the uninformed, these young kids at Loyola College on Monday morning.
Well, the blight is that it took only 10 years ago did we say sorry. And not only have we only just said sorry, the fact is every day the pain and suffering is manifesting itself in any number of ways, from health rates to life expectancy to infant mortality and
we
stuff.
We are the most imprisoned people per capita on the planet.
On the planet. So if we come back and interestingly, in our pre-chat, Kutcher, I learned something today which I hadn't ever heard about, but the King's Patent, yeah.
Yeah.
And our listeners who are familiar with, obviously, Palestinian rights, they've heard all sorts of, we did a story on the Balfour Declaration, but they'd be here, this was a letter sent to South Australia by King William IV in 1836, and ultimately what it did was give Aboriginal people the legal right to continue to occupy and enjoy their lands as they had always done. And the actual words, and listen to these words from the King's letter, provided always that nothing in those our letters contained shall affect or be construed to affect the rights of any Aboriginal natives of the said province to the actual occupation or enjoyment in their own persons or in the persons of their descendants of any lands therein now actually occupied or enjoyed by such natives. And the correlation between that language and His Majesty's government view with favour the establishment in Palestine of a national home of the Jewish people, and will use their best endeavours to facilitate the achievement of this object, it being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish communities in Palestine. Now, both of these proclamations by kings of Britain, onto lands occupied by ancient and indigenous people, required a terra nullis, a nobody's land. And even though terra nullis was finished off in 1992 in Mabo, The reality is the High Court held that since 1788, the proclamation of the Commonwealth held. So the fact that Terra Nullius existed from 1788 until 1992. Now, for that to happen, they had to, for a settler colonialist power, they had to get rid of who was here. And you talked about stolen generation, but we should talk about the 700 languages and tribes and those that don't exist anymore.
I can talk personally about what it was like to have to, in 1967, come down to Melbourne. The irony is it was in a police car. I can't remember it. Forced to live in a children's home in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, a place called Arana Methodist Children's Home, run by the Uniting Church, I'm sure it was. And 11 years of institutionalisation, not because I had done anything wrong to society as such, but because I was born black in this country. And so when I became a so-called, you know, adult, I got taught just down the road here in Cambridge Street, Collingwood, at a college called Koori College, about why I was forcibly removed, and it was because of politics and ignorance. And then later in life, you have a Prime Minister, John Howard, who refuses to apologise for past decisions of other governments. Well, I don't know who was in control in 1967. Can't recall who the Prime Minister was, but to know that that policy, the assimilation policy and the White Australia policy, had ramifications on this little Aboriginal boy. And so when I found that out as an adult, the person that I turned on was myself. You know, I can sit here as a 53-year-old man and come to the realisation that 20 years later, of 20 years of sobriety and 20 years of abstinence of mind-altering substances, is that I can honestly to this day say that I understand who I am and who I'm connected to, and that I descend from so many generations of Aboriginal people. Last November, I did a performance in Mildura for the return of my great, 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 great grandfather to his traditional place where he was found, Mungo Man, on Lake Mungo. And that old fella is not some remains. That old fella is who I just explained, is my great-grandfather. So when scientists proclaim we have the remains of Mungo Man, that's somebody.
That's a human.
That's a human. And so I am connected to that old fella. And so when those people removed me from my country, from my language, from my descendancy, my mum, my dad, my grandfathers, my grandmothers, my uncles, my aunties, my spirituality, my dreaming, my culture, and placed me in that children's home. There's an old saying, you can take the boy out of the country, but you can't take the country out of a boy. That's the same. You can remove me from my Aboriginality, what makes me Aboriginal, but it'll always be in me. I am Aboriginal. I am Mutti Mutti. And so that's what I can talk about. I can talk about what it personally means to me and what Sorry Day means to me. But not only to me, but my family, you know.
I was just going to say that what you're talking about seems to be something that the Palestinians are going through every single day, and the parallels are really, really scary. But the one thing that can't be taken away from the Palestinians is the fact that Palestine is their country. And by listening to you, Australia is always going to be your country for your people, no matter what happens. And I think that having you on this show is it's really eerie to hear the similarities that what happened hundreds of years ago here, which we don't hear about a lot, is actually happening today and will happen tomorrow, not only here, but horrifically in Palestine. Because today there's going, it's modern day colonialism. And what they are doing is they're stealing the land and they're actually denying that these people exist. And it's just a very, very scary thing. And these two gentlemen here, being Yusuf and Nasser, can attest to it. And their parents have said that, you know, Palestine will always be their home. Even though everyone is denying them the rights, it will always be their home. And I think, you know, the similarities are incredible.
So where the statistics tell the blatant truth is the life expectancy of an Aboriginal in Australia is 10 years less than a non-Indigenous person.
I look at that and I'm 53. My use-by date is 57. So I, 4 years from now, I'm not supposed to be here.
Well,
statistics will
say. I hope
say.
That's not the case. Could you?
No, but I'm
statistically, you're right.
That's the reality.
Yeah, yeah. And if you do live to 75, it means somebody dropped off at 45.
That's right.
For the average to be 65.
Well, like I've said, I'm 20 years into sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
I was on my deathbed in Panj Hospital, age 32.
Yep.
I'd had a heart attack at age 32. So I'm a man who's beat the statistics. I was gone at age 32. And what happened to me was my son was 9 when this happened. So 20 years after bringing them home report. So when it was tabled in 1997, 1998, I had my epiphany. And the reality is that in 1997, my father passed away. And in on the 21st of January 1998, my father came to me in an apparition on my deathbed in Panj Hospital. Now, people might suggest that I'm off with the fairies. Remember, I don't care what other people think of me. I know my father came to me and told me not to put my son through the same situation of what happened to me and him. I met my father when I was 17 years old after being taken off him. So when he came to me, in that hospital in an apparition, I know that he was telling me to get off the train wreck. And therefore I did, or else I would have been one of those statistics.
Another statistic. In 2015, Indigenous people were 13 times more likely to be imprisoned and made up 1 in 4 prisoners in Australia. Though they represent only 1.5% of the population of Australia, 1 in 4 prisoners is Aboriginal. The infant, so if you're under 5 years old and born a Palestinian, or under 5 years old and born an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander in Australia, you are 6 times more likely to die before you're 5. Than if you're a Jewish person or a non-Indigenous person in Australia. And the numbers are just so correlatable because settler colonialism requires a genocide of the Indigenous people. And we always remember that this is Aboriginal land, always was and always will be. One of the really, really startling facts is the maternal mortality. This is mums dying in childbirth. And it's practically zero in the Western world. For Aboriginal mothers, it's 7 per 1,000. So this is women, Aboriginal women in Australia, 7 per 1,000 will die during childbirth. It's just a staggering number. So when we think that the apology was 20 years ago and the sorry came 10 years ago, and we have like people like Pauline Hanson and her ilk saying Aboriginal people, we spend billions of dollars on them. Well, the reality is we spend $30 billion on useless walls. We spend $30 billion on religious schools and private school funding. We spend $10 billion on wars in Arab and Muslim countries. That's not quite enough to make up for all the pain and suffering that, Kuchi, you and your family and your people have suffered, but we'll go a long way to doing it.
If these people were truly silent, so what they wouldn't do is participate in allowing it to happen in another country. Now, they can turn around and say that they're sorry here, or not say that they're sorry, but dance around it. But then on the other hand, say that Israel is defending itself and doing all of these things, whilst it is clear-cut colonialism. How dare they turn around and say, we're sorry for what we did here, but allow it to happen in a different country?
They're not sorry. Australia and Israel are the same mentality. And we had our speech, my speech on the weekend at our rally, and, you know, I called it out for exactly what it is. Australia, the ruling parties, none of them is truly sorry, because if they were truly sorry, they would make reparations. They would make treaty with the people. They would honour the custodians of the land. They wouldn't allow a situation like what happened to Dillon in Northern Territory to occur. They would be teaching Aboriginal languages in schools, as opposed to 4-hour language classes are being cancelled. They're choosing between teaching the Indigenous kids their native language. And there were 700 languages here 300 years ago, and now we're down to about 150.
Mm.
That they're choosing to teach them English rather than their Indigenous culture.
Mm.
I mean, the ongoing crimes continue unabated.
I think we're heading towards the interview, so in the last 1.5 minutes or 2 minutes, I want to give the microphone to you to choose your words. It's not a question. You have the microphone to say what you want in the last 2 minutes.
Yeah. So, for me, Sorry Day on Saturday, the 26th of May, is not only Sorry Day. It's every time that a memorial pops up of my two brothers, of my sister, of my nephews, of my mother, of my father. Every time that Apology Day, the 13th of February, pops up in our psyche. Every year that Australia celebrates Australia Day, my people mourn. And so it's the culmination of all these moments in time that we can't get back. And the memorials, not only the memorial days, but the birthdays, because we celebrate the birthdays when my brothers are physically not here. I know they're around. I know they're still, their spirit still walks and visits us. That's what each year means to us, not just on Sorry Day. So, we live in, we're physical manifestations of walking spirits on this place, you know. And so these dates, they mightn't mean much to people outside this studio or 21 Smith Street. But they do to us as Aboriginal people, because we are the here and now of our ancestry, you know. So all I can really sort of thank you guys is that you're dropping your own pebbles in your circles, within your tribes, within your communities. And so that's what it means to me, is that we're not in the canoe by ourselves, you know.
We're with you, brother.
Yeah. Well, we are speechless, to say the least, that you have our full solidarity as a person, to your family, to your tribe, and to the Aboriginal population, all of them.
Mm. And to your struggle.
And to your struggle. Yeah. And we hope that one day justice will prevail to the Aboriginal people and to us.
I've been waiting for...